Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Have you ever wondered what happens when somebody is abducted? Or maybe you're one of those abductees. But what if your abduction became headline and affected not only you, but your entire family? Today, we're going to talk with Chris Bledsoe, who's going to be speaking at Contact in the Desert about his experience of being abducted. And he's going to be lecturing about orbs, angels, and ETs. Yes, we're going to talk about the story of Chris Bledsoe. I'm Tony Sweet with Truth Be Told. Please welcome to the Truth Be Told studios for the first time, the one and only Chris Bledsoe. Hey, Chris.
Hey, Tony. Glad to be here.
I'm very excited to have you on the show. We've not had the chance to talk before, so I'm excited to hear your story. I mean, I've heard it, you know, seen you on TV, and I've read your bio and all that stuff, but it's always great to hear it from the horse's mouth.
Yeah. It's quite a long story, so.
Well, we have plenty of time to talk about it. So, first of all, you know, we've, over the years on Truth Be Told, we've talked about abductees, and we've talked about abductions, and I've even talked to some people that say they were abducted, and it's always a fascinating story. A lot of similarities. Some have their differences in their stories, which is, you know, like with anything, it's going to have their own version. So for the people that's tuning in today and for the first time, do you mind sharing your story with us? And then we'll get into some more specific questions.
Well, sure. And to give you a little, well, just to tell you, I'm from North Carolina, if you wonder about this accent. between Wilmington and Raleigh. A town called Fayetteville, which is Fort Bragg, famous military base. I live about 20 miles or 25 miles south of it, sort of out in the country. That's where I lived then. I moved since then, but we roll back to January the 8th, which is Elvis Presley's birthday, by the way, of 2007. My son and I and three of my subcontractors, guys that worked with me at that time, we were building a house down on Holden's Beach, about an hour and a half, 2 hours away from home. And we'd been there about 4 months working, traveling, we'd stay there during the week, come home on the weekends.
Right.
So the job was over just before Christmas. We were finishing up in 2006. And to give you a little, just a little more to this story, I had been very sick from Crohn's disease. And,
oh, wow.
Yeah, at that time, had been sick for 17 years, being treated for that. And stress was really high. I had come through a difficult time in the hospital. I had a near-death experience in 2004. Sold a big company, $15 million a year annual building company. We were building a lot of homes for about 20 years there. And
wow.
We'd had a really bad time with sales and business because of the 911 and war. And my doctor said, you need to sell this business or it's going to kill you. So that's what we did. And so all that was going on before this 2007. I had to make sure everybody understood that, because when I think it was a Tuesday afternoon, about 12 o'clock, the guys were coming home from the coast and called me and said, mm-hmm. we'll be home. We're done with the job. I said, well, come pick up your checks. And they wanted to go fishing that day. So I said, okay, they wanted to celebrate. So they went, did their thing, called me back about 2 p.m. My son and I picked these guys up because I had the only four-wheel drive truck, and we were going down on this muddy Cape Fear River. So along 2:30 time frame, we were down at some folks that I grew up with, had this piece of land. They've sold it since, I think, but it was a little 1 acre or so, maybe an acre and a half, clearing in the forest right alongside this river. And you drive across the field to get to it. And when you get to the other side, you go down in this valley to this, you drive straight up towards the river, and then you make a turn and you go down parallel with the river. It's about a quarter mile from the field down to the camping spot. Of course, we wasn't camping. We were just fishing for the evening. So about 3 o'clock, 3:15, they were all sitting there, were just getting situated, fishing poles in the water. I wasn't into fishing. I just told them, I'm going to go take a walk in the forest down by in these deep river gullies. I want to just walk and see wildlife. But the key to it was I was really struggling with having to sell a company at a big loss and dealing with a sickness. So I was struggling severely in depression, but I didn't want to let them know this. 46 years old, I've had to sell everything because of economy and health. It was just bad. And so I was in that state of mind when I walked away at 3 o'clock. It got dark about 5:30 at that time of year. So along about 4, I came out of the forest, 4:15, back to where they were fishing. I just took a stroll for about an hour down in the woods and came back, kind of sat down in there against a tree a bit. But when I got back to them, I asked, do you want us to fish more? Or do you want to go home? They were like, are you kidding? Let's fish a bit more. I said, well, it's going to be cold. Let's get a fire going. So we all took off and went around the edge of this acre grassy area, woods, big woods all around,
right,
and picking up sticks and whatever, and had a big, huge pile of firewood, and had a small fire going when I left. I left again about 10 after 5. I said, I'm going to walk up to the field the way we came in. This was the opposite direction where I'd gone earlier. And I just want to go up to the field and sit and see if any animals come out to feed, deer, coyotes, whatever. And they said, okay. So 10 after 5, I left heading back the way we came in. And when I paralleled the river about an eighth of a mile walking, I heard some disturbing something in the forest next to me walking. I didn't understand what it was. Thought it might have been a deer or a turkey. So I spent a good 5 minutes trying to see what was tracking me in the forest. I was thinking animal the whole time. Got down, made a turn towards the west, which would take me uphill to the field. We're coming out of this river valley up to a cornfield, or was at that time. And as I made that turn, I'm looking west now, and the light from the sky was, couldn't see the sun, but the light was brighter down that that route up. And so I felt more comfortable didn't hear this walking in the woods next to me anymore. I was perplexed about that because it sounded like 2 feet. And I'd been a big woodsman all my life, hunting and fishing, and I'd never been unnerved in the woods, but that, right, for some reason had me unnerved. But as I started up the hill, I forgot about that. It was dark, getting dark, but it wasn't dark yet. The sun, I figured, was already set. Couldn't see because I'm down in the bottom. And as I'm going up this muddy road, I'm watching my feet not to step in a hole. And as I got closer to the top, I started to see what I thought was the sun right middle ways of the road. And all I could see, the hill in front of me, is the top of it, just above the top of the hill. Right. Looked like the sun. So as I walked further up, I began to see more of this, what appeared to be the sun. And by the time I got to where I could see 2/3 of it, I knew it wasn't the sun. it looked like the sun late in the evening when you can see it and it doesn't hurt your eyes. It was right, that color of orange red. And it looked like a swirling fire spinning around like clockwise, and these little flames were shooting off this fire off the tips. And it frightened me, but I started on up the hill a bit more, and all of a sudden there's another one just like it. And I froze in my tracks. I squatted down using the hill in front of me to hide. You know, this is unfolding as I'm climbing right, the hill. All this is starting to come in view. So I ducked real quick and I said, "Oh my God." I'm commercial rated pilot. So I knew it wasn't anything from Fort Bragg. It wasn't a drone. Right. It was something from not here. And so immediately I started contemplating, planning my exit back down the hill to where my son and the guys were fishing. And I'm mesmerized, so I would poke up my head a little bit above the hill to where I could see, and they were still there. I'd drop back down and think, and I began to get very, really afraid. So I turned to look my route down the hill, escape route. I turned my whole body, fixing the run, and I popped up and looked back over my shoulder as I'm departing. And the minute I popped my head up, they knew I was going to run because a third one came from above me. And I mean, it was at a distance, but it was up high. And it just appeared and shot down beside these other two orbs, right beside them. And at that very moment, I knew that they saw me and that I'm in trouble. I didn't know what to think. And so the next thing I remember, that's when everything just, I experienced 4 hours of missing time.
4 hours.
I started walking back to the fire. I never remembered at that time what happened. I looked up, I started to run, and I squatted back down because I knew they saw me. Next thing I remember, I'm walking or trotting up to the fire. But when I got there, the fire had burned all the way down to a small fire. And here's these three friends of mine. They're standing there. My son's not there. And they're asking, "Where in the world have you been?" Now, I'm still thinking I've been gone 10, 15, 20 minutes at most. Right. And I'm like, "What do you mean? I was just up at the field." They said, "No, you've been gone all night." I said, "No, I haven't." And then I realized Christopher wasn't there, my son. He's 17 years old. And so I panicked. They said, "Well, he went on foot looking for you back into the woods where you went earlier that day."
Oh, no.
We got in the car, the truck, your truck. We took your truck, two of us, and went out and searched for you while one guy stayed at the fire waiting. Well, Christopher never shows back up. He's been missing for 2 hours. So, man, I panicked big time after experiencing this at the field.
Right.
And hearing all these guys talking about searching for me, I couldn't even tell you what I'm thinking at this moment other than fear. So I took off running to the back of that away from them towards the back of that little camping area, shouting for my son. No answer. When I got to the forest edge, it was real thick along the edge on the river bottom. If you got a clearing, you got this undergrowth just right along the field. Once you get in the woods, it'll open up some. So I'm trying to plow through this 6 or 8 foot, 10 foot of thickness to get where I can halfway maneuver. I'm worried about, you know, my eyes, a stick, whatever, no flashlight. And as I'm calling out for him, I hear him in front of me underneath this stuff. And he's coming out from under there and beginning to say, I'm here, Daddy. Why did you leave me? Where did you go? Why did you leave me? These creatures, I've been here. I couldn't leave. I couldn't scream. And he's telling me all this,
oh,
right?
Oh, man.
And I'm in la-la land because I didn't experience. I don't know what happened to me other than I saw these big three balls of fire. And now I'm hearing all this confusion between, you know, it's just incredible what happened. So I managed to get him up and under my arm and trying to explain that I didn't leave. I just walked up to the field. Yes, you did. I've been looking all night. So I'm leading him back to the campfire, about 50 yards away. Get to where they're standing, and they're just not saying anything. Eyes big as saucers.
Right.
They're trying to make of what has going on. You know, I'm talking, missing time. They couldn't find me. Now my son is talking about seeing these balls of light that came walking down the road or came floating down the road. So here's the long story. When I mentioned that when I walked away from the fire, I went down about an eighth of a mile and made a turn west. Well, that whole eighth of a mile, my son had a clear view from where he was standing at the back of the cul-de-sac all the way down that part of the road. And what he saw was when I made the turn, went up the hill and been gone, he was looking for me in the woods, but he turned around and looked back the way down the road, and he saw these two red balls of light come out of the forest, cross the road into the woods on the riverside.
Mm-hmm.
So he walks down to the three guys fishing and said, there's some weird stuff happening. I just saw two balls of light go into the woods. Well, they got nervous and said, don't be messing with me, Junior. And one of them's a real funny guy, and he was telling Christopher that. And he said, I'm serious. So Christopher walks away again, walks back to where I found him. He just told him what he saw, and he leaves, and he goes back looking at his dad. Well, when I get back towards, when what he saw was these balls of light come back, when he went back to that spot, those lights came back out of the river bottom, on the riverside, went back out in the road. Now he's standing back, and here's two balls of light coming straight down the road from an eighth of a mile away, straight to him. And they look like the size of maybe bowling balls, and they're glowing red. And there are two of them, about 3 feet off the ground, and they're coming all this way. So he starts hiding. Starts backing himself down, laying down in the shrubs, and backs up underneath this thick stuff, hiding because he got nervous.
Right.
These orbs come all the way up to within 15 feet of him. And they knew he was there. That was what was tracking me when I walked up to the field with these orbs. Well, when they get near him, he begins to see there are these two little entities that are glowing this soft glow, and they had these red, fiery, red, mechanical-looking eyes. They looked like about an inch and a half around, maybe, each, and he describes them opening and closing like shutters, straight up and straight down. So he couldn't scream. They were on the ground around him for all this time, playing with stuff. They pick up sticks and look at them, throw them on the ground. One of them was always watching him, and he said he couldn't scream. He couldn't move. He was frozen. And as he's telling us all this, we're back at the fire now. And all of us trying to make sense of it. Nobody's fishing. It's about 11:30 or 11 o'clock that night. And at that very moment, one of the guys said, "Look," and he shouts real loud, pointing up at the sky. And what it looked like, Tony, was the brightest stars you see, like Venus is a very bright star.
Right.
There were like 9 of these stars. There was 8 or 9. I counted 8. The other guys counted 9. So they just moved from their place. They just all started coming from different directions and came together in a big circle, like above, way up there. They kind of went around and made these gyrations, and they went back apart from one another. And as they were doing that, 3 of these things came all the way to the ground, to the on the other side of the river, which is about 75 yards wide where we were fishing. And the forest was cut down, timbered on that side. So they were in that cut down. They looked to be 40, 45 feet balls of light around the diameter. Well, let me tell you, it didn't take but a second for everybody to panic and big. We ran to the truck. We left all the fishing poles, coolers, fire going, everything, and jumped in my pickup truck. It's a 4-door Ford pickup, 4-wheel drive, and 3 in the back and Chris and I up front. And all of a sudden, I mean, they're screaming, yelling, "Let's leave fast as we can." And this old truck is wallowing. Because this river bottom's black, North Carolina black mud, and it's slick, it's greasy, and the ruts are a foot deep, and the mirrors are dragging on these limbs going out of there because it was very narrow and overgrown, and I'm going fast as I can, and it wasn't fast enough. They're beating on my seat. Go!
I'm sure I'd be doing the same.
Yeah. So one of them described this red orb came out of the forest where Christopher was. It was still there. And we left there with 3 balls of light on the ground on across the river. Mm-hmm. Now one of these red orbs is behind the truck, chasing the truck, tailing it as we're leaving out of there. I didn't see it, but others described it. When we got to the top of the hill, I was going so fast that it felt like we left the ground as we crested the top of that hill. And the minute we crested the hill, I had to slam on brakes because now these 3 red balls of light that were there when I saw them earlier that evening were still there. 2 of them had not moved.
Wow.
But the third one that appeared when I was about to run that evening, the third one appeared above me. It's not in its place where it went to. It's on the ground in front of us. And it's about, it's not red anymore like the other 2, like it was. It was glowing red. Now it's on the ground. It's 150 yards in front of my truck. It's sitting across the road. So we couldn't, it's like 5 feet off the ground hovering. And it takes up the whole path. The whole road is like a football. It looked like a 45-foot, maybe 50-foot tic-tac. And it's exactly how I described it. And Discovery, they came and did a show, and they actually did an animation of a tic-tac. So for those that wonder how I got involved and people from different parts of the government, well, I'm describing exactly what they're filming with their Navy ships and stuff.
Right, right.
And I'm telling them something took me for 4 hours. So you can imagine where this has all led to. So now we're stopped in the road. these men are screaming. My son is yelling. We're going to die. We're never going to see our family again. We got all these lights on the ground behind us on the river. Now we got one in the road in front of us and two hovering above the trees that are blood red now. They look like a blood red color. And there are others flying about. Those eight or nine are still around, and they're still maneuvering. People are, you know, the guy was saying, look, and I'd look, here goes one this way. So we're under assault. We're at this, it's just, I can't explain to you what we were all believing. It was the end of the world. It was, we were being invaded by something from another planet. That's all we could think of. And so there's this little mobile home to our right at the back of that field. Only house back in there at that time. And one of the guys, Donnie, he said, I know who lives there. Let's go over. We need a, I didn't even have a telephone then. I just refused to have one because of my building company having, you know, 300 to 400 houses under warranty. You can imagine a lot of phone calls. So my doctor's advice, do away with it, get away from stress. So here we are caught with no phone. And so I pulled into these people's front yard. I drove right up to their front porch, headlights shining in their front door. The porch is like 6x6. It's a little small deck. And their door was wide open. Their storm door was closed. The TV was going. Two cars in the yard. And Donnie's knocking on the door, and nobody comes to the door. Nobody. We knew somebody had to be there. Next day, they went back, or 2 days later, to get their fishing poles and stopped there. And these people said, we were home all night. We didn't hear it. How strange was that? So I back out of their yard. I get back on the path. And now we're all facing this thing again. And it's still there, hovering 150 yards or less away, 5 feet off the ground. All of a sudden, we hear these three shots. Somebody shooting at this thing. That's all we could think of. And as soon as the third shot happened, it pivots like a pivot straight at us. It's pointing at us now. Mm-hmm. And here it comes down the road straight at us, 5 feet off the ground. Now the yelling and the fear is getting louder as it's approaching us. And it just starts gaining altitude. And when it crossed over my truck, it was barely above the tops of the trees on behind us, which are about 80-foot trees. So it had to be about 100-foot high, between 80 and 100 when it crossed over my truck. And blinding white, brilliant light that was revolving around it, sort of clockwise. And it was just this mix of light. It was incredible. No sound. It kind of pivots again above us and fires off towards the north like a bullet. So I hit the gas and we're going home. Now these three guys, they're all best buddies, but one of them is the biggest, and they were fighting who was going to get to home first to see their family.
I'm sure. Yeah, they're like, me first.
Yeah, so we ended up diving 10 miles, 5 or maybe 8 miles either way, there and back, to drop the biggest guy first. And then we dropped the other two off because they lived beside one another. So, and their wives, when we got to the second stop, both houses, we were still seeing these lights from where we left because they lived a couple miles away by air or less. Even their wives were seeing. So Christopher and I take off home after we drop these guys off. And he's in shock. He's panicked. He's in shock. I'm worried about him. I'm confused. I don't know what's happened other than it's just the shock of my life. I never thought about UFOs before that. And so Christopher is going methodically to every bedroom, locking the door, turning the inside lights on, closing the blinds, and then locking the door. Even the bathrooms with no windows, he'd lock the door with the lights running. All the outside lights are going. And I'm in my study changing every channel looking for world news, invasion. I just knew it was all over the news. Couldn't understand why it wasn't. And once Christopher gets the house locked down, he comes in the room and I'm flipping for news. And at that time, I hear this noise. And the best way I can describe it, and I've thought about it in every manner, is it sounded like a Schumann resonance that was on a rheostat that was running at a normal rate for a second, and then you kind of turn it down to it stops. And that's what it sounded like passing over the top of our house, very low. So I thought, helicopter, but how strange a sound. My mind immediately knew it was going in the direction of the river. By air, we're only a mile and a half, 2 miles away, and it was heading that way. But it stopped. And so within a couple of minutes, my dad's next door, we lived beside one another at that time, and he had always raised dogs, hunting dogs. Right. He had 15 at that time, big hound dogs. Yeah, as many as 100, 104 when I was younger. When he traded them and sold them with his friend. It's a big hobby. And so these 15 hound dogs all of a sudden just start this roar, every one of them barking to the top of their voice with the strangest sound of something is scaring me. I don't know what it is. And dogs can, you know, are like humans. Their voices are different for everything. Right. And growing up with them, I recognized this was fear. And so I said, Christopher, somebody must be breaking in Dad's garage, because his dog kennel is next to his garage. And in that garage is our dad and our, you know, hunting, fishing, boats, and tackle, and welding equipment, all this stuff. And I just was worried about a thief. And so I said, Christopher, we're going to have to go see what's going on. No, Daddy, please don't go out that door. Don't open the door. Please don't. He's telling me this every breath. And I'm looking out the back door, you know, full 15 light door. And through the glass, my Chesapeake Bay Retriever is standing at the bottom step, hair bristled up, barking every breath towards the kennel, which is about 100 yards away in the forest behind our house. And so I said, Christopher, somebody's out there. It's dark. Nobody will mess with us. The dogs will protect us. We just slip out there and see what the dog pushes out. So the minute I open the door, he's got me by the back of the shirt, right in the middle of my back. And he's at every voice, he's protesting not to go out that door, but I was intending to go see if somebody's breaking in my shop or our shop. And so when I open the door, Rosie takes off. This big 100-pound Chesapeake. She's a big dog. She takes off straight to the kennel, runs out about 25 yards and looks back to see if we're coming. And when she saw us heading that way, she ran on. So we used the darkness, didn't have a flashlight, eased back in this path in the forest back to these dogs. And now we're looking at these dogs, and it's dark, but I could see them, and every one of them is barking in the opposite direction from the garage. They're looking behind the kennel in the forest. And I'm confused now, because I knew if it was a thief, they would have taken the road to go. They wouldn't go back in the forest. You know, there's no way.
Right, right.
So I began to think maybe the golf course had reported a bear. I didn't know. Deer, usually dogs are not scared of, but a bear they are. Could be. So I'm going through all this while Rosie is at our feet, pointing in the forest, barking, growling the same way they are. I whispered to Christopher, I said, son, I'm going to send her in the forest. you and I are going to run back out to the yard and run, and we'll get behind this big oak tree at the rear of the property. We've got to do it quick, because once she goes in, she's going to push them out. And it's just hunting. You know, we grew right. up hunting dogs. So.
I grew up in Kansas, and I was a hunter, too, so I know.
You understand. Yeah. So I bumped her on the rear with my foot. I said, get him, Rosie. And she took off. So Christopher and I ran hard as we can back down this path towards our house.
Right.
And he's got me by the back of the shirt. And when we got to the grass, I made a left turn. Never forget, it was slick. It had frost on the ground. And he's pulled loose from me. So I thought I just had outrun him a bit, right? Come to find out, he didn't want any more of this. So he runs to the house and locks the door. He's looking out the back door. I didn't know this for the second. So I run hard as I can to cut this dog off. I get to the back of the property. I run in a full run, and I stop myself against a giant oak tree. I just run up against it and use my hands to stop myself. And I'm panting for trying to get my breath count down. And at the same time, I turn around to look behind me with my hands against the tree to see if Christopher was coming.
Right.
I thought I was a few steps ahead of. But when I turned around and I hear Rosie coming, I'm facing the tree, my hands against the tree, the dog's behind the tree and the forest coming to me, right? So I look behind me, and instead of Christopher being there, about 6 feet away is this little glowing, looked like a child to me, like a little child, 4 or 3 years old.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com, and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It was glowing soft color like the moon. It had a triangle on its chest. And I painted that in 2009. And that triangle was like the light had it kind of blinded where you could see it, but it was, the light was overbearing. And I was so afraid that I took my hands off the tree and I got closer to the tree so I wouldn't get closer to it. Nice. And I turned around and I put my back against the tree and I'm facing it. And I said, I surrender. You have me. I'm sorry. I was doing everything I can. I thought it was going to harm me. And I hear this thunderous voice. It sounded like a man. And it said, you don't understand. We're not here to hurt you. We're here to help you. And within seconds, here comes my dog from behind me now. It's still coming. And when it makes just about to crash out in the clearing, this thing disappears.
Hmm.
Completely disappears. Well, there are theories about that. I was talking to one of the investigators today, Norm Gagnon. He's writing a book about this. He was one of the 6 investigators that came. He did the testing on this tree. The tree is actually, the whole part of it fell out and died. The whole thing collapsed down onto the ground, dead. Big help the oak. And he thought that this being may have went straight up and was perched on a tree and its energy killed it or something. I don't know. But I know Rosie ran on by out of hearing, still tracking something. And it was 2 days later before she came home.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And
Chris, do you mind if I ask you a quick question? I don't want to interrupt your story because this is so fascinating. because you and your son both encountered these before. Like, it sounds like you were in, I'm going to quote possession with the extraterrestrials. Why do you feel like they, after they let you go and went on your way, why would they pursue you and then again reappear at your home? Why do you feel like they had to come back? Do you feel like they wanted to come back to give you more of a positive experience?
Yes, because here's the thing. The next day, I had been taking medicine for 17 years for Crohn's disease.
Right.
A horrible disease. And it was so bad. During the time we sold the company, it was so bad that I would be in and out of the restroom 20, 25 times a day. That's how bad it was. After that night, I have never taken another pill. I've never had another symptom.
Wow.
I can drink and eat anything I want. Until that time, I couldn't drink coffee. I couldn't drink any drinks other than Sprite, and I was so sick of them. That's right. All I could drink other than water. Right. But fried foods, all that I enjoy today, I can drink orange juice by the gallon. And so that was the blessing that came from this thing. And not only that, they never quit coming.
Oh, they continue? What about with your son? Just you?
Yeah, no, they come for the whole family. In fact, when you watch the, if anybody watches this interview I did for Contact in the Desert, I use a PowerPoint and I share a few of the videos that we take around here.
Right.
We have a lot of people that come, a lot of people see it with me, experience it with me. One of the most recent, which he's telling a story now, is I get a call I get an email Thanksgiving of 2019, and I think it was 2019, and it was Dr. Bob McGuire from Virginia Tech Institute for National, that's called the Hume Center, Virginia Tech's Hume Center for National Technology. So Dr. McGuire is the head scientist there,
right.
Pretty much ran that place. And, you know, he's very big into intelligence. He's just a genius, this guy. And so I didn't know him. He writes me this letter at Thanksgiving, and he wants to come visit. And that same week, and I'll talk about Dr. McGuire here in a second, but at that same time at Thanksgiving, one of our best friends, Harold Povenmire, passed away. So that was quite a shock.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, he was a scientist at NASA, and he was an astronomer, one of the best, and he was the first person from the government or from any place to come call on the family. He did that in 2008. He was there, and he went to my children's functions for 13 years. So that tells you the relationships
right.
that we've created. But I just had to throw him in here. So let's back up to Dr. McGuire. He writes me in November, and he wants to come. Of course, we had Christmas coming and the holidays, so I put him off until after the first of the year. Just had too much going. And it works out, I think, I can't remember, January, February, anyhow. We actually end up seeing each other out in San Francisco. But before that trip, he comes, he writes me and tells me about he and his wife and his background, and he wants to come, so he does. And my youngest son, Ryan, was here, and we all spent a lot of time with Dr. McGuire. Everybody got to meet him, I think, in the family. It rained the day he came, which was Friday. It rained all night, and we just sit and talk all day. Saturday it rained. Saturday night it rained. So we were housebound with his lovely wife, Sharon, and my wife and our children. We were mesmerized by his stories. He's just been so many places and done so much. And so Sunday comes around. We all go out to dinner on Sunday evening and come back home, and it cleared up. And he's like, can we go outside and do some sky watching? I said, absolutely. So we stand up, and here we go out to to the back of the property. We have 15 acres here in town, actually. We're about a quarter mile from the city limits. And it's kind of dark at the back of the property. So we walk back there, and I just do what I normally do. Ask in a very polite way, in a prayer, if it be your will to, I would love to introduce you to my friend, Dr. McGuire. That's how I did it. And within seconds, they started appearing.
Wow.
And he can tell the story. We saw countless orbs appearing ground level, some of them right above us. We had this just huge purple haze with orbs inside of this haze that come down over top of us. And these larger orbs, like 40-foot orbs up in the sky, they're flying about. And Ryan actually filmed some of it. But more about this, as I told him after that night, I said, Dr. McGuire, says you can expect the way they acted when I asked them, they were so excited to introduce themselves to you, I knew that they would follow you home, that they would be with you from this point. So he's like, okay. Well, within a few days, a week, he's gone. I get a call. Chris, there's some strange stuff happening here. I said, well, tell me about it. He said, well, Sharon and I got a house down in Alabama on the coast, and we just had a new metal roof on it. And we're getting, on a sunny day, we're getting water sprayed on me. I'm getting wet out of thin air. And I started smiling. I thought, yeah, that living waters is all I could think about. And I'm putting this out, projecting this thought, knowing it's positive. Well, after about a week, week and a half, I think one time we were on the phone, it happened while we're talking. Long story short, it ends up happening to Sharon, his wife. And Sharon had this cutest lady. She's a little school teacher. Just the mama kind, and she innocent, right? She gets this water sprayed on, and Sharon had had a stroke, and she was healed from the complications through this, this, what I'm telling you, how do you describe this? This
right.
water that come out of thin air. Seemed to take her, she was having complications from the stroke. Dr. McGuire tells this story, and I just love to, because it's such a positive thing, right? And this is all recent.
Oh, recent, wow.
Very recent. And
well, I think,
the last...
I'm sorry to interrupt you. I feel this, because when I'm looking at these pictures, even though they're shaped like the grays, they don't seem like the grays. And so is this, I know at Contact in the Desert, you're going to be talking about orbs, angels, and ETs.
Yeah.
Is this more of a angel encounter, or do you feel it is a combination of extraterrestrial angel? Because it doesn't look and seem like normal grays.
Well, I was struggling with that for the longest time. I could never get around the fact that I was suffering from my health and all this suffering. And I'm crying out that night. What I didn't say was that night while I'm walking away from the fire and everybody, I'm talking to whoever's up there.
Right.
I'm putting out this, Lord, help me. I'm 46. I don't have a company anymore. I'm so sick. I can't work. How am I going to raise four beautiful children?
Right.
And I got to think the universe today, because my daughter is the last one graduating from New York University on the 19th NYU, a master's in music. I have a son that graduated a master's in data analytics, and a son that's, I mean, all of them are very smart and very blessed. But for 12 years, it was a struggle. It was the worst struggle. People are the worst thing. It wasn't the government. Right. Government folks come and wanted to know what's happening, and sure, they're investigating this. And I know a lot of folks in the government. It's people, the average people, that are so critical and cruel. Right. And they've, I mean, my children at school during this time had teachers call them out in front of class, poke fun at them, their daddy's crazy, all kinds of stuff.
Wow.
And, you know, I'm 60 years old, and I wouldn't tell this if I didn't have a way to prove it.
Right.
I probably have more video and more photo than MUFON does myself. I have 15,000 photos and videos on my phone. No joke. Not all this, but a good portion of them. There are 500 videos there. And the last one I took on Easter, this past Easter, and I told everybody. I told Jimmy Church. Jimmy said, we need to do a show that night on Easter. And we didn't, but we should, because I could have filmed it live while we were on the air. But I knew it was coming that night. I walked out with my camera ready. I don't go looking for it. It usually comes looking for us.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it. Like I said, we so many people have experiences and they don't ever talk about it. Do you feel that if your son and your friends were not there, do you feel you would have talked about it as much as you do now? Because when you're the only one that's experienced it, exposing it to your family and your friends, they're going, okay, daddy's gone off his rocker. But do you think if you would have ever spoke of this if it was just you?
Probably wouldn't have known what to speak about, because I wouldn't have figured it out. Nobody could convince me I had missing time. It did not happen. Right. They're saying, we were looking for you.
Right.
No, you weren't. Yes, we were. Four of them with MUFON investigators there. They're all looking at me saying, we were searching for you. So it took them to convince me something really happened other than the lights. Now that was amazing and all that. I think that that made a bigger impact of having these four other witnesses. And there were more. Dr. Pavenmeyer found eight other people in that neighborhood that saw it too. And he got their testimonies on paper.
Why do you, because a lot of times when family members, like you said, all your family has been exposed to this, and not exposed might be not be the right word, but as they came to your family, did you ever go to your parents or talk about maybe grandparents, great grandparents that have had experiences like this? Because a lot of times it seems like abductees or it kind of runs in the family. So have you ever done any research of past family members?
Absolutely. In fact, it was friends from NASA that encouraged me to do my ancestry. They wanted to know where my bloodline. And there was some friends from the CIA that suggested the same. You need to do your ancestry. Do you have any Cherokee in you? So I could question all my families, are we Cherokee? And mom's like, I was told my grandmother was Cherokee. Well, I get all this. Yeah, you're Cherokee. You got that in you, right? So we do ancestry.com recently. And it comes back that I'm like 98% Irish, British Irish from Dublin area.
Right.
98% Cherokee. So that did away with that theory. But I think, they're all into bloodline. And also, it's pretty crazy that last name Bledsoe, we trace our history right back to Bledsoe Castle in England. Hmm. And the King Henry VII, which was the first Tudor Scottish king,
right,
was born to in Bledsoe Castle. His mother was a Bledsoe.
Wow, that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, so we're connected to the royal family, and we have this this Irish, Scotch, Irish, British, and it says Dublin area, is what it says on this. But yeah, for 14 years almost, we've been researching this. So we ended up doing the DNA thing.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, real quick, on because I know time's going quick, but and I've told this story before, my mom, my two sisters, my brother, and myself, when I was very young, 6, 7, 8, I don't remember, but apparently we were driving, because I'm from the country too, small town. We were out in the country. We saw a UFO that was hovering over a lake, no sound, all that stuff. And then my sister just recently told me, and I've never heard the story before, that she was dreaming about being abducted that night. Well, then she woke up in the morning, both her socks were soaked, like she had been outside.
And then
my mom said, I didn't know this, but Sherry said my mom called the Air Force base in Wichita, Kansas, and that apparently they came down and started doing a bunch of research. I don't remember all that, but it's fascinating. I mean this is always fascinating. And why do you think they choose certain families, and why do you think they chose yourself? I mean, it could be the bloodline, but if it wasn't the bloodline, why do you think they chose you?
Let me say this. When you asked a question earlier, I can't answer why they chose me. I've been asked this a million times.
I'm sure.
and I just can't tell you. I do know it's blood. If your sister's having it, you're having it, your family members are having these experiences. It does run in families. I hear it's on the mother's side, or could be either side. There's a lot of speculation here. I can't answer why, but let me say this. This is important to all these researchers out there, because people feel comfortable calling me or writing me. Over the last 14 years, I have had so many people reach out to me. This innocent little 80-year grandma saying, "I just have to tell you, I've never told anyone." And I get this from, you just couldn't imagine just how many, in a thousand, or at least 1,000 in that many years, people. And I try to always respond to everyone. And I want to. And I ask a question first time. Okay, tell me what was going on in your life when you experienced this. And 99% of everyone that calls me tells me the same thing. They were suffering from trauma. Mama died, son died, a relative. Something was going on to trigger this. Not every time, but a good 99% of all that call me, were their husband died, this 80-year-old lady friend, all of a sudden, money is pennies are showing up in places in her house, or things are moving about, or her husband's wallet was there one day and it's here the next. And this goes on for weeks. And it's always that way, Tony. And when I reported to MUFON in 2008, late 07, I told them I thought they were angels. And to this day, I still believe this. Now, what are they? All I know is they responded in that manner. I was sick with Crohn's. I'm not sick anymore. My friend Dr. McGuire's wife was struggling from a stroke. She isn't anymore. I have a friend that had lung cancer, kidney cancer, and she's a very dear friend of this family. She is free from cancer today. And she experienced stuff on my property and others, friends from Washington, D.C., power brokers in D.C., a son, and I can't say any more, but he's coming. He was not supposed to live past 10, maybe 13 years old. Well, he's going to college this year.
Wow.
And he's coming to visit us in August. Can't wait to see him from Washington. And so it's all been positive. I'd have had a scary experience, but I didn't have, like some talk about being having negative things happen to him. That hasn't been the case. And then 13 years, almost 14 years later, all I can say is I've been blessed with a wonderful family, and I don't need much of anything.
Right.
And I'm happy. And that's all I can say. It's been a very big thing, positive thing for us. It's turned that way.
Well, I'm going to leave that right there because I want people to get their tickets for Contact in the Desert. It's a virtual event this year. It's June 25th through the 28th. You're going to be there. You're going to be talking about orbs, angels, ET, the Chris Bledsoe story. It's going to be Friday, June 25th, 6:45 to 8:15. You're going to probably talk about the same thing we're talking about, but I'm sure you're going to go into more details, PowerPoint, and be able to show a bunch of stuff that we wouldn't have got to today. Has your son ever spoke out as much as you, or does he kind of want to stay out of the spotlight?
No, he's talking about getting ready. I mean, for the longest time he ran from it, and I would say, son, I believe they're angels. He said, no way. It affected him differently.
Right.
But
right.
Now, today, a miracle happened with him. Let me put this in there. I got it. In 2019, Easter, for some reason, Easter, every Easter, these messages, the orbs appear on Easter Monday of 2019. I expected all weekend for them to show up, and I was going to have this, and usually it's with people, friends, relatives, somebody that says it don't happen, and it happens with them.
Right.
So on the evening of Easter Monday, 2019, I walk out my back door. We live in a little cabin on a pond on 15 acres. It's private. You go through a gate, get in here. So when I walk out the back door, I'm 6 foot from the water, right?
Right. Nice.
And the minute I open the door, I'm looking across the pond and my eyes are drawn up above the trees, 100 feet in the air, and this huge orb about the size of a beach ball just starts getting appears, and it starts flashing very brightly, and it starts rotating colors, red, yellow, white, red, yellow, white. Then here it comes. They're always spiraling. When they move, they go in a spiral. It spirals down through the tops of the pine trees to the ground on the other side of the pond. And now here it is at the edge of the water, and it's jumping up and down 10 feet in the air, and it's red, yellow, white when it's doing that. Oh my God, I dropped straight to my knees. I didn't move. I said, Lord, protect me. I know you're not here to harm me. This thing starts out across the pond. It gets middle ways of the pond, and I'm asking the Lord to protect me, but I'm going to stick this out. It gets about 25 feet and it stops. I pull my cell phone out. I find video. I'm talking. I'm asking for help and safety while I'm fumbling my phone. I find video, and I'm pointing it at this thing, and it's jumping up and down 10 feet. For a good 5 minutes or so, my hair is standing straight up, and I'm seeing this, and I'm thinking I'm recording it. I'm just late. Well, I look up, and I forgot to hit record, but I'm on the video, right? I said, dang. So I hit record, and the minute I hit record, it knew my thoughts. It dims down from a beach ball size orb to now an orb of a softball. And it's just a solid white orb in the middle of the pond, and it would blink out. And it would go up and come on and go down and come on, instead of being lit the whole time. So I filmed 17 minutes of this thing in front of me. I filmed it that close, 25 feet away with my cell phone. It put information into my head, which is how they do this, to say, get out and tell your message.
Wow.
For 8 years, I haven't spoken because of some friends at Hollywood that wants to do a TV show. So I signed this agreement, and we wouldn't talk about it. And I had a lot of friends still doing the government and scientists that wanted me to be quiet. The quieter you are, the more you learn. That's what I'm told. So 8 years, I didn't speak. 2019, that night, I got up the next day. Dreams were like, you got to tell the story. You got to tell it. You got to tell it. And for all week, I put it off. Struggled with it. My son wants to go fishing on the Outer Banks the following weekend. We go to the beach, four of us. After a long day of fishing, we go to the beach cottage, and I'm taking a nap. Because I deal with rheumatoid arthritis.
Right.
And I'm so tired, and the guys were cleaning fish, and it's dark now. So I wake up about an hour later, and I walk out to see if they started supper yet. That was the plan. They were going to clean the fish and cook while Dad takes a nap. The minute I open the back door, 2 miles out, this orb appears, and it rushed our position so quick, and it stopped within 300 yards of us. And stayed there for 5 minutes. And I filmed it with my cell phone with all the guys saying, oh, my God, I see it. What is it? And so you can hear us all talking while I'm filming this thing. That clock is flashing orange and red and orange. So that was a reminder to tell the story. So the following week, I started putting the word out. I'd talk. And I did 10 interviews from that point to the end of the year. All with a warning of trouble times ahead. That's what it said. Get out and tell your story. Trouble is coming. And sure enough, come January, COVID hits. Right? January, February.
Right.
And all this crazy stuff that's happening today, they warned me to get out and tell this. So I guess they knew that I was just old and crazy enough to face the public. And if somebody wants to say I didn't see it, well, then that's their words against mine, and I could care less. They can stick their head in the sand and stay there. I don't care. Take the warning or don't.
Right. But you can do only what you can do.
That's right.
And how do people find you? Do you have a website? Do you have social media?
I'm on Instagram under Chris Bledsoe, and on Facebook, Christopher Bledsoe, maybe senior, I don't know, but you can pretty much find me.
Your story is, it's almost like it was yesterday, you know, and it's been 14 years ago. So, I mean, just from your memory, that's amazing. And
it's burned into me. I could remember every detail.
I'm excited for Contact in the Desert, because I know you're even going to be more detailed and sharing your story. And I can't wait to hear your son. I hope he can get the courage and share his experience too, because it's great to have everyone. And the people out there, please, if you don't have to be fearful to share your story of an abduction. I mean, I know people are going to think you're crazy, but there's a lot of people out there that have experienced the same thing. So I encourage you, and I'm sure Chris does too, to tell your story, and you can reach out to Chris on Instagram and Facebook.
Also, I'd like to say all my kids are experiencers. Junior, Chris Jr. had that experience that night, mm-hmm. but immediately when we came home, craziness started and never left. Right. My wife, my children, they will right. tell you straight up, they've all experienced it. My dad, my mother,
oh wow,
a lot of friends, yeah. And so all my kids probably have as many as more experiences with this than most anybody, because wow. it's ongoing.
Right.
And my youngest son Ryan, he was about 13 when this happened. So, and my daughter was 9 or 10. And so those two became magnets, you might say, to this thing, because they were so young.
Right.
And Ryan has his own podcast he's creating.
Oh, great. It's going to come. Great.
Yeah. He's talking. He's a genius. All these boys are smart. But Ryan can do anything, and he can talk Carl Jung, and he's just very intelligent. So he's got this podcast, and he's begging Dad to be his first guest. So
oh, you better
we're
be.
We're going to go on his show. I will be. I reserve that for him.
Well, everybody, please go and get your tickets for Chris's lecture. It's going to be or actually just get your passes for Contact in the Desert, and I think it's included in the pass. It's his lecture is Friday, June 25th. So it's orbs, angels, and ETs. And Chris, thank you so much for being on the show. And please come back. I'd love to talk to you more. It's you remind me of the my folks from back in Kansas. You know, country folk. I love it.
Well, I appreciate that, and I'd be honored. You just let me know. You can contact me.
You got it. And everybody, please, support Contact in the Desert and support Chris and his family. I mean, it's, this is important. So please subscribe to our channel and share this show. We'd love to hear from you. Great feedback and constructive criticism. And subscribe to all of our podcasts, iHeart, Apple, Pandora. We're on Pandora now, Spotify, and all that. So until next time, I'm Tony Sweet, and thank you for joining us every Friday. Until next time, bye, everybody.
When you start to ask the question, it unfolds the fabric of space itself, how it's made, what is it made of?
Not alone in this universe. We never have been.
Alien intelligences have cohabited with us on this planet for millions of years.
We inherited the obsession from the Anunnaki.
Anyone that still thinks that we're the ones that are obsessed with gold does not know enough about the true history of our species, how we came to be here,
and the conditions that brought us here.
We are not unique in this universe. Extraterrestrials do exist. We are, so to say, the copies of them.